Back When is sponsored by Siwi, the National Trust's photo printing partner. Every image captures a story. Siwi's support means the National Trust can protect our nation's memories by caring for and sharing our vast collection of historic photographs. Through our work together, we're uncovering precious and previously unseen images for everyone to enjoy. Discover our work snapshotting 200 years of history. Search online for Siwi, that's C-E-W-E, and the National Trust.
The ship was washed into the rocks, into the Farne Islands, and was eventually wrecked against Big Harker Rock. The boat itself split in two, and sadly that meant that a lot of the passengers and crew were immediately lost. But a small group of survivors managed to climb off the bow of the ship and onto the rock itself.
The Farne Islands are a group of 28 islands lying approximately 5 miles off the Northumberland coast in the northeast of England. They are a national nature reserve and home to a breeding colony of seabirds and Atlantic grey seals. Today, no one permanently inhabits the islands. However, their most famous former resident is Grace Darling, a Victorian heroine who becomes well known following a daring sea rescue alongside her father, one stormy night in 1838. It's an event that was to change her life forever. Have you ever imagined being a fly on the wall of history? Join me for an inside view of the stories of people, places, and moments that made us. I'm historian Helen Antrobus. Lean in for a tale from time back when. As an island nation, the sea plays a role in all our lives. From swimming, surfing and sailing to providing the fish to go with our chips, it's hard to imagine life without the waves that surround us. But with around 9,000 lifeboat launches in the UK each year, the sea is also a very dangerous place, and while state-of-the-art technology is used in sea rescues today, in the 19th century, things are very different.
In the early 19th century, the advent of steam power has brought a huge increase in the amount of shipping travelling around Britain, and along with that, a huge increase in the number of wrecks. In the 1830s, there's this kind of increasing sense of panic amongst the population about the number of people being lost at sea. For example, between 1833 and 1835, there's over 1,500 vessels lost, and at least another 100 reported as missing.
Andrew Lewis is the Heritage Development Manager at the Royal National Lifeboat Institution, Grace Darling Museum in Bamborough, Northumberland.
Before the creation of the Royal National Institution for the Preservation of Life from Shipwreck, which later became the Royal National Lifeboat Institution, or RNLI, in 1824, and there wasn't really any coordination between independent lifeboat efforts around the country. The institution itself was the vision of Sir William Hillary. He lived on the Isle of Man and saw huge numbers of people being lost at sea. So Hillary began trying to source enthusiasm and money from those in positions to support it. So between politicians and even members of the clergy. In 1824, they held their first meeting and started to pull together like-minded people to drive this initiative forwards. According to Hillary, at its heart, the institution was a large body of men who were in constant readiness to risk their own lives for the preservation of those in extreme peril. And of course, when Hillary wrote those lines, he wouldn't have realised that just a few years later, it would be Grace Darling, a young 22-year-old woman, who would be making headlines for saving people from the sea.
Born in 1815, Grace Darling is the daughter of a lighthouse keeper who works on the Farne Islands. And from the age of just 3 weeks old, she lives in the lighthouse on Brownsman Island in the Outer Farnes. At the age of 10, her family moves to Longstone Lighthouse, the furthest out of the Farne Islands.
In 1825, a new lighthouse was built on Longstone Rock, which is at the end of the Farne Islands, and as the name suggests, it is literally a rock with a lighthouse built on top of it. From this stage on, Grace was living on this lighthouse day in, day out, and they didn't have anything immediately surrounding them. It was just the sea. Living out on the end of the Farne Islands, they were incredibly exposed. Especially when the weather picked up, there'd be huge waves crashing onto the lighthouse itself. So very remote upbringing, very wild as well. Grace was a very quiet, studious person, had a great sense of duty and focused on caring for her family and those around her. So typically day-to-day growing up, Grace would have mainly supported her mother with cleaning, but then increasingly as time went on and her brothers predominantly moved away from the lighthouse, she took an increasing role in supporting her father and his work as the lighthouse keeper, so taking turns in keeping watch if she was the only other person in the lighthouse.
The RNLI Grace Darling Museum is a treasure trove of Grace's personal items, including letters, portraits, and even her clothing and locks of her hair. It also houses a model of the Longstone Lighthouse. Grace is a skilled oarswoman. She rows an Northumbrian coble, a big wooden boat. And that coble is also on display at the museum.
It's quite a big, heavily constructed boat. It probably weighs about half a tonne. A 21-foot is very typical to this part of the coast at the time. So you'd kind of have three or four people rowing it if the conditions were a bit rough. But Grace very much grew up exploring the Farne Islands and travelling back and forth with her brothers and sisters and her mum and dad. So it was kind of the equivalent of the family car, really.
It was in the coble that Grace and her father go to the aid of some of the crew and passengers of the steamship, the Forfarshire.
The SS Forfarshire was very modern, quite luxurious paddle steamer. It was on the regular route from Hull to Dundee twice a week. It was quite well thought of boat at the time. It was well designed. The owners even thought perhaps it might be unsinkable, which even led to them reducing the insurance on the boat, which would unfortunately come back to them later. But it was really well fitted out, which is why, as well as attracting passengers for travelling for practical reasons, to visit family or for work, they even had passengers who would essentially be going for a cruise up the northeastern coast. So on the 5th of September, the SS Forfarshire has left Hull on its twice-weekly trip up to Dundee and sails up the coast. As it reaches the Farne Islands, one of the boilers springs a leak. They've managed to effect a repair, essentially, and keep the boat moving. And they carry on, get almost as far as Berwick, when the boiler fails completely. So at this point, the captain rigs it for sail and tries to seek shelter from the raising storm just off the Farne Islands. Unfortunately, the storm builds faster and stronger than he expected. So there is a thought that he mistook one lighthouse for another and ended up further out into the Farnes. He thought he was sitting between the mainland and Inner Farne, but he was actually looking at the Longstone Light. And so the ship was washed into the rocks, into the Farne Islands, and was eventually wrecked against Big Harker Rock. The boat itself split in two, and sadly that meant that a lot of the passengers and crew were immediately lost. But a small group of survivors managed to climb off the bow of the ship and onto the rock itself.
That night, Grace is on watch in the lighthouse, keeping an eye out for ships struggling in the storm. At 5 a.m, she looks out and realises she can see a ship dashed against the rocks.
Grace goes straight to her father and wakes him up, and they look out. And he decides that at this point it's too dark, the storm's too strong, there's nothing they can do. At this point, they can't even see if there's any survivors on the rock. They can just make out the shape of the ship. So they take a break and kind of have some breakfast and get themselves ready and return at first light about 7 o'clock and look out again. And this is the first time they're able to see there are some survivors clinging onto the rock for their lives. So this is the point which they have a discussion about what can we do? Can we feasibly make a rescue at this stage. Grace's father thinks it's impossible for the lifeboat from Sea Houses to make it out. It's too far, the storm's still too strong. So they decide that the only possible hope these people on the rocks have is for Grace and her father to put their own lives at risk and to go out and try and save them themselves. So with the help of Grace's mother, Thomasin, they launch the coble. And Thomasin waves them off on the rescue as they row about a mile through these raging seas to get to Bikaka. They get there and find 9 survivors on the rocks. Sadly, 3 of the people that had escaped the wreck had died on the rocks, including 2 children.
Grace's father climbs out of the coble onto the rock to assist the survivors. Grace is left to hold the boat on her own, a feat of incredible strength.
So the waves would be trying to push Grace and the boat onto the rocks. Of course, if she were to give in and let that happen, then she and her father would join those survivors on the rocks. There'd be no feasible way for them to be rescued. That constant pressure from the sea and the wind trying to push her into the rocks, and the amount of strength it must have taken for her after a mile's rowing in the midst of a storm to keep the boat away from the rocks was really incredible.
On the rock, it's obvious to Grace's father they're not going to be able to take everyone back to the lighthouse in one trip. So he commits to coming back to save the rest of the survivors on the rock.
He chooses a couple of the strongest crew to come with him in order to be able to row back to save the others. And then also those who are most at risk, so injured. And a lady called Mrs. Dawson, who was the mother of the 2 children that had tragically died on the rocks. So first 5 survivors climb into the boat with Grace and her father, and they all row back to Longstone. Grace and 3 of the survivors stay at the lighthouse while William and the 2 strongest crewmen he could find row back out into the storm to rescue the remaining 4.
Grace's bravery and incredible feats of strength and endurance are so remarkable that she's still being celebrated today. Many visitors take the popular boat tours around the Longstone Lighthouse and pass by Big Harker Rock each year. Here's Nick Lewis. He looks after cultural heritage for the National Trust on the Farne Islands.
So almost 2 centuries after the rescue, Grace Darling is still very fondly thought of around these parts, well remembered and celebrated. We still get school visits to the Inner Farne, children who are studying Grace as part of their topics at school, because it's such a powerful and compelling story that is really tied into the islands here and the landscape around us. And she's still celebrated here on the islands, of course. We even have a memorial to Grace on the Inner Farne in the chapel, which we can go and see now. So we've just come into the monastic courtyard on Inner Farne. This was a working monastery in the Middle Ages, and the chapel here on our right was built, we think, first in the 13th century, but the building that we see before us today was slightly later, in the 1370s. So you can probably hear it's now an active nesting site for Arctic terns. So we can just head into the chapel now. We've actually got a beaded curtain on the door to discourage the terns from coming in. The first thing that really captures you when you come in is the stained glass window, which was installed during a Victorian restoration of this chapel in the 1840s. And of course, this was only a few years after the rescue that Grace enacted. She's actually commemorated in the window in one of the rondels. And it's one of the key things in this room. It's one of the most vivid parts of this room. It's a beautiful space, but the colours of that window really draw the attention. And it's only fitting, I suppose, that Grace is up there. It's not the only mention of Grace in the building. A memorial dedicated to her, which include a passage from William Wordsworth's poem, Grace Darling. And there's one particular detail I can read you here, which was pious and pure, modest and yet so brave, though young, so wise, though meek, so resolute. And I think that sums Grace up really nicely. She was very fond of the Farne Islands. She was particularly at home here, really, spent a lot of her life out here. And even after her death, her family would come to services in this very chapel. It's a room and a space that's very much associated with the Darling family.
The poetry and stained glass windows inspired by Grace highlight how this unassuming young woman becomes a historically important figure. Following the rescue, Grace captures the public's imagination and is the focus of Victorian Britain. Here's Andrew Lewis at the RNLI Grace Darling Museum again.
So immediately following the rescue, Grace comes to the attention of the newspapers through the inquests into what happened to cause the ship to be lost. They recognise, firstly, what a good story this is. You're kind of in the age of the penny a line writers for newspapers at the moment, so anything they can spin into the kind of dramatic, romantic story would earn them more money. But also the fact that it's an incredible feat of human endurance. So the story spreads very rapidly from local papers in the northeast, particularly Baron Berwick, to London and then nationwide. This attracts attention from everywhere, particularly from the very young Queen Victoria, who's just come to the throne. She sends a gift of £50, a huge sum in today's money, to Grace and the family.
The gifts continue to pour in, and so does the attention, as well as requests for locks of her hair and fabric from the dress she was wearing during the rescue. Grace receives items including a bonnet, sewing boxes, and a pocket watch. Paintings are also commissioned of her.
She sat for several portraits on the lighthouse, many visiting artists coming to paint or draw her. There was obviously an assumption that she'd be quite a tall, broad person, having rowed out into these stormy seas. So you find there's a little bit of variation amongst the portraits, a little bit of artistic license. Some do lean into that a little bit and make her a bit bigger than she actually was. Every picture has a slightly different spin on her appearance.
As well as sitting for portraits, a great deal of Grace's time is spent writing thank you letters to well-wishers.
So there's a huge number of letters that are written to Grace from all around the country, whether they're just wishing her well, thanking her, or offering gifts or requesting gifts in return. Grace has this huge sense of duty that she needs to respond to each and every one. She doesn't really talk about the rescue much itself. She doesn't go into any detail. She's incredibly humble about the whole affair and feels that she was in a position to go out and try and save these people, so she felt duty-bound that she should. There's a lovely quote from one of her letters. I had little thought of anything but to exert myself to the utmost. My spirit was worked up by the sight of such a dreadful affair that I can imagine I still see the sea flying over the vessel.
Grace and her father are recognised for their bravery with two medals.
They were both given silver medals from what became the RNLI, Grace being the first woman to receive an award for gallantry from the RNLI. And also gold medals from the Royal Humane Society, who provided awards for those that had helped others. This huge increase in notoriety and fame and all the people that brought with it, people taking boat trips up the coast to kind of see the Longstone Lighthouse and try and visit the Darling family, was incredibly intrusive. And for a family that had grown up in isolation, and particularly Grace, who was quite a quiet, humble person, it was a completely alien sensation, and it was not something that she enjoyed at all. It was very difficult for her, especially sort of people coming to her home where she didn't really have any refuge. It's a single building in the middle of the sea, so there was no escape from that attention.
In the end, the impact of Grace's fame has tragic consequences, as meeting lots of people exposes her to a deadly infectious disease.
Sadly, on one of Grace's trips to the mainland, she had picked up TB. Obviously, growing up in a lighthouse, she was quite isolated from the population, so perhaps wouldn't have had the best immune system. All the increase in well-wishers travelling up to the region as well had perhaps brought TB from more urban areas where you'd usually find it. And yeah, sadly, she had a long illness. After she failed to recover from the lighthouse, she went up to Woola nearby, to the mountains, to see if the mountain air would help. She then went to Alnwick to stay with the Duke and Duchess of Northumberland for a short while. But sadly, her condition deteriorated and she came home to Bamborough to die in her uncle's cottage. This is particularly poignant because it's just 4 years after the rescue and she died at the very young age of 26. Grace remains in Bamborough. She's buried in the family grave at St Aidan's, just across the road from the museum. There were over 200 mourners came to her funeral. Shows how well she was thought of in the local area. And a memorial was very quickly erected in the churchyard, which looks out to sea, with the idea that she could be seen by passing sailors travelling up the coast and she could be remembered by them.
Grace Darling is a great Victorian heroine. Her part in the rescue puts the thought in the public's mind that women, just like men, can be strong, courageous and risk-takers too. Grace's story is enduring. Her actions are as inspiring today as they are in 1838, and her qualities live on in our current lifeboat crews.
We've got numerous female crew members up and down the northeast of England who cite Grace as a real inspiration in them making a step into life-saving today. And there have been numerous lifeboats named after her. There's still one on service, a D-class at Sea Houses, our nearest station, which is named for her. The organisation has now saved over 140,000 people at sea in its time, which means that as a result of that, there are 4 million lives that have been lived because someone in the family tree has been saved by the RNLI.
If you've enjoyed this episode, make sure you follow, rate and review us on your favourite podcast app. And if you fancy visiting the RNLI Grace Darling Museum, go to rnli.org and search Grace Darling Museum for more information. For visits to the Farne Islands, head to nationaltrust.org.uk and search Farne Islands. And if you'd like to see a mural of Grace Darling, search Wallington. Thank you for listening to this and all our Back When episodes. This is the last story of the series, but we'll be back with a special episode next time for a look behind the scenes with me, Helen Antrobus, and my co-host and historian, James Grasby. There's so much history content at the National Trust, from our YouTube channel to great days out at your nearest heritage sites. History and amazing stories are all around us every day, just waiting to be unearthed. Thank you for following Back When, and see you next time. This podcast is sponsored by Siwi, Europe's leading photo printing company. Every image you capture tells a story. Discover ideas for curating and creating your special memories and unique gifts for loved ones. From high-quality, personalised photo books to wall art made from your favourite photos. Head to Siwi, that's cewe.co.uk, and start creating your story.